We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
Mike, you're the CEO of the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity. For our listeners who might be unfamiliar with your center, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is and what the mission is?
Sure thing. We're a think tank. We call ourselves a free market public policy think tank, which means that we generally believe that lower taxes, less government, would free up and unleash businesses and individuals so that we could achieve a higher level of prosperity. So that's our name, Freedom and Prosperity. But it's a think tank, and we're part of a national network of about 60 like-minded think tanks, one in every state at least.
It seems like a big part of the problem with Rhode Island's economy is political complacency, how lawmakers generally don't feel much pressure from citizens. Why doesn't your center put more effort into trying to increase public participation in politics?
It's actually what our goal is, and we're young. We're still earning our stripes, and gaining credibility. So first time on your air is just part of that. So it is our goal. We can't get involved in elections and candidates, and we can't even get involved with endorsing or opposing specific bills. But we can try to change the public debate by adding other perspectives and adding new research into the debate, and that is our mission, exactly.
You know, a lot of people look at inequality, wage inequality especially, and think that what some lower-skilled workers need are more unions. I mean, there's been a real decline in private sector unionism in this country. And as someone who once belonged to one of the strongest unions as a professional baseball player, one of the strongest unions in the country, how do you feel about organized labor?
We have, you look at a lot of issues like unions. You look at even, we talked earlier about, social services spending. All that, I think, is fine and are acceptable under a free market perspective. The question is, to what degree? We think there comes a point when there's so much money going to non-productive activities, however you want to define those, whether it's excessive pay or excessive pensions or excessive public assistance, that it does hurt the overall economy. It can hurt the overall economy. We think in Rhode Island, if you look at our rankings, that we're past that point. We think that spending in those areas is so large that it is now strangling our economy. So we're not against them philosophically. We just think in practice we've gone too far.
You mean the public sector unions?
Public sector unions. Yeah, well, even private sector unions, when you're required to hire union shops or whatever, that just raises the cost of a lot of projects and a lot of businesses. So while it's not taxpayer money, sometimes it is taxpayer money going to private unions for construction projects and things like that. So, again, everything in moderation. We think we're overdoing that in Rhode Island.
Mike, a new report from your center gives Rhode Island failing grades for economic competitiveness. It also finds the state has done little to raise its competitiveness compared with other states, including our neighbors in Connecticut and Massachusetts. What steps does the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity advocate to make Rhode Island more economically competitive?
Well, you're up on your news. We just released this week our second annual report card on Rhode Island competitiveness. And the whole point is we believe that's the case. That's my baseball background, that we believe you have to be competitive. And if you look at our report card, which measures 53 areas, we get 27 Fs and 13 Ds. That's over 75% of the grades are Fs or Ds. That means we're not competitive with other states. We're losing people. We know that. We're losing jobs. We know that. And we're not doing much about it. The report card didn't get any better last year, despite all the talk about all the supposed good things we did to help the economy. The report card says, no, we really didn't.
So how would you sum up just a couple of things that could make Rhode Island a better economically competitive state?
Well, again, there's 53 areas we can improve upon, and there are at least 40 of them that got Ds and Fs. We've talked about our sales tax, and that alone would change our ranking dramatically in the cost of living and in the business climate. But I think it's primarily taxes, fees, and regulations that need to be worked on.
Massachusetts is going in a different direction, as you know. Why do you think their economy is so much better than ours, even though they have more generous social programs than we do, including universal health care?
I don't know why. We're especially non-competitive against our neighbors. You look at our economic
unemployment
compared to Massachusetts and Connecticut. It's not even in the same ballpark. We talked earlier about having enough funding for social services and education. We think the way to do that is to grow the economy. I'm not familiar with Massachusetts policy, so I have to punt on that a little bit. But we think it's only through growth that we can have everybody win, that we can raise more taxes to pay for education, to pay for social services, and to enhance our business climate. I think if you keep trying to tax the wealthy, businesses, that, yeah, you might gain more money for social services or for this cause, but you're going to harm the economy. So instead of win-lose policies, why don't we try win-win policies
for
once?
Well, I will say one thing. Governors, smarter people than I am, but governors of big states, I know they're Democrats, Massachusetts, California, Jerry Brown, Andrew Cuomo in New York, all of them have proposed increasing income taxes on the wealthy.
Well, we just think that's typical, if I may, progressive or liberal mantra. And we think we've tried that way too much in this state. And, you know, if you look at our report card, and again, anybody can do it at rifreedom.org, you can look how where Massachusetts and Connecticut are doing things better than us. So I would say, to answer your question, raising the income tax on the wealthy actually hurts economic growth. It may raise some revenues for pet projects, but it actually hurts economic growth and costs jobs.
What if your pet project is investing in education? I mean, Deval Patrick now wants to raise, as you know, wants to raise the income tax above the Rhode Island level for the mm-hmm. upper income folks and take that money and invest it in education, infrastructure, and transportation.
Well, you have to wonder how much of Massachusetts' success is due to Patrick or maybe due to a prior governor like Romney, a Republican, you know, many years down the road. So we don't agree with cutting taxes here, but raising let's do win-win. We think that's the only way everybody can have the funds they want.
Mike, you mentioned how your center has a proposal to wipe out Rhode Island's sales tax, which is a major source of state revenue. How much would it cost to do that, and how do you get the political will to do that when the General Assembly doesn't seem particularly interested in doing that?
The political will comes from the fact, I think, that it helps every single family and every single business in the state. It would lower the cost of doing business. It would get rid of compliance costs and headaches for businesses. And it would help every family by lowering the cost of living, especially low-income families. It's proven that the sales tax, or it's theorized and that the sales tax will help low-income tax families more in this state. So we think that's a pretty large political base. The only thing that seems to hold us back is that we're stuck on numbers in a budget. And we think that's bass-ackwards, if I may. You know, what should come first? How to reach this revenue amount or how to create jobs for our state? We think we should say we should have the goal of not reaching a revenue number but creating jobs and then adjust the budget proportionately. And we think that more people would then be able to trade in welfare checks for paychecks. There'll be less need for social services spending because more people will be working.
Where should the money come from to eliminate the sales tax?
Well, we laid out a lot of areas. In the first year, if we apply last year's budget surplus, we freeze this year's budget, and we take in the projected increases in other tax receipts without raising rates, that's going to only leave us with about $100 million to totally repeal the sales tax in the first year. You'd need about another $100 million next year as well. That's not a big price to pay. That can come from anywhere. You look at the waste and fraud, you look at corporate welfare, you look at a lot of areas. There's no reason it has to come directly out of the pocket of social services, or at least all of it.
I realize the sales tax is a regressive tax. Liberals argue that as well as conservatives. But one thing in Rhode Island, we have $1 billion a year tourist industry. And isn't the sales tax a portion of our sales tax? I haven't done a deep study on it. You probably have. Paid by tourists, folks who come to Newport and have dinner, folks who go to Block Island, this great tourist industry that we do have, Providence with its restaurants?
Well, again, you're substituting income for the state from one area to another. Yes, in fact, the summer months, which is our first fiscal quarter, do give us the highest amount of sales taxes ever, and it's probably because of tourism, clearly. But with the sales tax gone, more people are going to be stopping in Rhode Island, coming to Rhode Island and shopping. More businesses will be growing and expanding and starting up. More people will be hired, working longer hours. So our income tax receipts are going to also explode almost to the same amount. You know, the income taxes and other receipt increases will almost make up for the loss in income tax. Plus, we'll have a healthier, from the sales tax, plus we'll have a healthier economy and more people working.
We don't always see a lot of profiles in political coverage here in Rhode Island, but we did see Treasurer Raimondo lead an overhaul of the state pension system. Providence Mayor Angel Taveras brought the capital city back from the brink of bankruptcy. What lessons do you draw from those recent experiences in challenging fiscal problems?
Well, I think it's what we said earlier, that while we need to pay pensions and we need to have public employees and we need to have unions, we probably overdid it. And I think that's proof that we did. And we have to scale that back. We still think there's a lot more room to scale back. Both in, we did a study last year that showed even not counting benefits, even compensation rates for public employees are higher than their peers after controlling for education and experience and all are higher in Rhode Island than they are in the private sector. And we're the only New England state that has that again. So again, we overdo it. And I think those cutbacks and those pension trimmings were just a sign of necessity.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And the CEO of the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, Mike Stenhouse.
Great to be with you, Ian.